Welcome to this video. Today I have an interview guest I was looking forward to very much. He's one of the best known coffee producers in the world. He's producing coffee in third generation. His son is already also in the business as the fourth generation guy. With his coffee, he has won a lot of competitions like Best of Panama several times with 95 points and more. His coffees are so locked after that in 2022, some people even paid more than $6,000 for a pound of his coffee. It's none less than Wilford Lamastus. Hello, Wilford.
Hello, here. How are you? Thank you for your interview. I appreciate it. Thank you for considering me.
Yes, sure. And I was really looking forward to talking to you. You're such an active person in when it comes to coffee and coffee production, and it's obvious that you're really into quality. Therefore, I look forward to deep dive with you. And before we go into the topic of coffee production, maybe you can tell a little bit about you and about your family business, what you're doing, who you are.
Okay, for sure. Thank you so much. Okay. My name is Wilford Lamastus. Like you said, I am the third generation coffee grower. My son is the fourth generation. So we have been growing coffee for 104 years already. This year will be our 104th year. We have two main farms. One is Elida, which where I am right now. We have El Burro is another farm. One is on my father's family side, this one Elida. And El Burro is on the mother's family side. So in both cases, my family, both families were born in coffee farms. I was also born in a small coffee farm. What I mean by small, maybe in some places it's not small. For example, Elida is 65 hectares, of which 40 are planted with coffee. El Burro is like 60 hectares, but only like 30 are planted with coffee. Not all of them producing. Now, I was born in a 2.5 hectare farm. It was a farm until about 30 years ago. Now we have our nurseries there because it's in lower elevation. And here in Panama, if you want the plants to grow faster, you don't plant your babies or reproduce them here where we are. This farm starts from 1,700 meters here at the mill, and it goes to 2,001. It goes to 2,200. We have harvested at 2,050. We have coffee planted at 2,100, but it takes a long time. In where I was born is at 1,200 meters, and the nursery grows much faster. So having said that, yes, sorry to prolong so much, I am the third generation. The fourth generation is very active. My son is a family business on both sides, Lamastus family. That's the only thing that I have done in my life is coffee. So, you know, and I continue doing it with pleasure, passion, thanks to people like you, to the consumers that are going to be watching or are watching this podcast. We depend very much on people with, you know, demand for specialty coffee. And every time you tell me, hey, Wilford, can you do this or that? It's my pleasure to do it. So that's who I am. And thank you for the introduction.
Nice. It's very interesting. We already talked a little bit about the estates, like Elida. Can you go a bit into the location of them? Where, like, at which altitude are they? What is the surrounding? What is the environment? And kind of to get an idea on what is the relation between the environment of the farms and then also the quality of the coffee?
Okay. It's a very interesting, you know, location where Panama is. Panama is a very narrow country, and that's why we have a canal. So being so narrow, and then to the north of Panama, if you look at a map, the north of Panama is the Caribbean. If you go straight, you will end up in the east coast of the United States, you know, Florida, all the way to, you know, New York, Boston. And then to the south, we have South America, and we have the Pacific. Here where we are 90 kilometers white. So the north, the Caribbean is probably 50 kilometers, and the Pacific about 40 kilometers from here, from Anita. We are, all of us, when I say we, normally, most of the time when I say we is the specialty growers of Panama, specialty coffee growers of Panama, mainly the specialty growers of the SCAP members, Specialty Coffee Association of Panama. So our farms are on the skirts of the Barú volcano. On this side of the volcano, okay, so the volcano starts from the mountain range in the north and goes south. On the east and on the west side of the volcano is where most of the coffee farms are. So the volcano goes all the way to 3,475 meters. But of course, coffee doesn't grow higher than, let's use an easy number, 2,000 meters. Of course, we have extended the elevation because we have land available to 2,050, 2,100. So some other coffee growers here too. But this farm is a total of, Anita, 65 hectares, start at 1,700 meters, and goes all the way to 2,200 meters. But coffee grows very easily the first, say, from 1,700 to 1,800. From 1,800 and above, the yields are lower, a bit more. But we also have coffee about 1,800 quite a bit, up to 1,900 and some. And then we also have coffee up to 2,050 meters that we have harvested and sold. In El Burro, the other state, is located also in the skirt of the Barú volcano, but not in the same location. So you need to see a map, like a Google map or whatever. You can see that the Barú volcano starts in the mountain range. The mountain range divides the country in half, goes up, and then continues all the way to the south. So at the same elevation, El Burro is located 12 kilometers to the south of El Lira and has a total different microclimate, total different rain profiles, total different vegetation. I mean, not total, but the vegetation is different. So the coffee profile in El Lira and El Burro, those are totally different. So, which I have, if I have a geisha at 1,700 meters here, do X process, dry it the same way with the El Burro, the cup profile would be different. So that's why one of the reasons that we get so many clients coming to Panama and go from one farm to the other, because they know that they're going to find a different product. Okay, it's like jumping from Burgundy to Bordeaux in 12 kilometers, 10 kilometers, you know? So let me give you the macro. Let's start with our neighbors. Colombia, this year they exported like a bit more than 12 million bags, 60 kilo bags. Costa Rica probably 1.8. They have been going down, but 1.8 million. Now go a bit north to Nicaragua. Nicaragua's already 2.7 million. Honduras is like 8 million bags. Okay, I said 12, Colombia, around 2, Costa Rica, our neighbors. Panama last year exported 30,000. So we're very small, but people come here because we have different, you know, crop profiles in a short distance because of the microclimates and all that stuff. So our area, we call it unique. The rain patterns are unique because during the dry season, those farms located close to the mountain range that divide the country in half. Okay, let me go back. Panama starts in the west. Costa Rica is to the west. and that goes horizontally, and Colombia is to the east. Okay, it's not south, like South America is not. So, as a matter of fact, if you land in Panama City, where the Panama Canal is, and then you drive for flight to Boquete, and Boquete is a bit south of Panama City and is close to Costa Rica. In fact, some of the farms in Panama are just with the border with Costa Rica. So you are here in a farm here, in one of the farms in Panama next to Costa Rica. You walk across the street and you're from Panama to Costa Rica, and you come back and you drive your car sometimes in the Costa Rican road because those roads are not paved. You drive into the Costa Rican garden, come back here. So Costa Rica is not to the north, it's to the west. So some of the farms are next to Costa Rica, to the west, close to here, not that far. It's on the other side of the volcano, a bit further away. So that's how Panama is located. And it's interesting for those coffee people that are very interested on how to look at a map and then go to Zoom, see the elevations, see the areas. As a matter of fact, they can check our website and we have all that there to see how unique, because we don't have these big plateaus like Colombia has, Peru, Colombia, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Honduras. Panama has 77,000 square kilometers. Colombia has 1 million. You know how many square kilometers Peru has? 1.2 million. Panama 77,000. And we only grow coffee here around the mountains because we cannot. We have Robusta in the lowland. Okay, but that's for a different use. Okay, so that's our microclimate. So volcanic soils, unique microclimates, high elevation, and then also farmers like me that have been doing this for many years, that it's much easier to adapt to changes.
When I'm listening to you, I'm a bit questioning myself, you know, is it like, because like the Panama coffees, they are so popular within the coffee connoisseur scene or like the competition scene. And is it more that Panama has really a particular climate or also soil because of the volcano? Or is it then is it the culture that, for example, coffee producers have been forced because of what you told us, they cannot produce big amounts, so they have been forced to produce smaller amounts, but then of very high quality. What is it a bit like? What's your idea on that?
Okay. Everything that you said is part of it. Yeah. Okay. For example, we have been growing coffee here in this same land, in this same farm. You're very well invited. Everybody is invited. I love receiving people here for more than 100 years. So, because it's a unique terroir, very, very, very special for coffee. Okay, so special. So I'm gonna give you some details. For example, okay, so I'm gonna give you an interesting detail or information. Panama is carbon negative. Not more than 5-7 countries in the world are carbon negative. Here, we're like 100 meters higher than here at 1,800 meters. We have a national park. It's called Barú Volcano National Park. It's a 14,000 hectares park that goes all around the Barú Volcano. Okay, on the east side, the north, the west side, and the south, all the way to the top, is a national park, except for some towns that they just take them out of the national park. The national park is very biodiverse, very biodiverse. For example, in 14,000 hectares, we have 225 species of birds, butterflies, foliages, and all kind of, we have vertebrates, insects, diseases for coffee. So we are biodiverse. So having said that, we have a lot of, trees that surround our coffee plantation. Not only the Barú Volcano National Park, we have another even more interesting, more biodiverse park. It's called International Friendship Park, that is shared with Costa Rica. It's the mountain range that divides the country to the north of the Caribbean, to the south of the Pacific. That mountain range that divides the country in half. Listen to how important this park is. This is a world heritage. United Nations decided that this was a world property, like the pyramids, Machu Picchu, the old quarters of Panama City, the Beijing Wall, all the castles, the beautiful churches and castles in Europe. Those are man-made. There are 2,800 man-made ones. All those that I mentioned are man-made. Naturals, Panama has three. An island in the Caribbean called Coiba, the border with Colombia, there is a big forest, Darien. There is no road to cross from here to Colombia because of that forest. And the International Friendship Park is also a world heritage. We have three in Panama out of 223 in the world. In 77,000 square kilometers, we have three. Okay? So listen, why did I say all this? Because some of them are around here, around me. I can see them from here. I can see the International Friendship Park, the World Heritage one. So you guys understand coffee very well. You know the coffee comes from Ethiopia, not from Panama, not from Colombia, not from Brazil, not from many other places. It comes from Panama. I come from Ethiopia. In Ethiopia, it grows well in the mountains. For biodiversity, bacteria, yeast, microorganisms beneficial to coffee. So the coffee plant has adapted very well in our terroirs. It has adapted. We consider that it has, many of our colleagues have been to Ethiopia many, many times. And I have not, but I understand and I have read. So it has adapted very well here because it feels like home, you know? So then we have that biodiversity that helps the coffee plantation around here, us, the volcanic soil. Many people have volcanic soil. Many countries have volcanic soil, even more volcanic than us. We have the elevation. Elevation is very, very important for coffee quality. And yeah, like you said, farmers like me that have been doing this for many years, and we continue doing it, and we learn from people like you, we learn from people, our clients that come in and tell us, you know what, your whatever, an aerobic 18 days is too much for me, please make it a little bit or do this. So whatever information we get from our customers, that many, many come here. Before COVID, I used to receive, say, for example, 100 people during the harvesting season, let's say January to May. This year, we received more than 150 people because COVID, everyone wanted to travel with different ideas from different parts of the world, from Zurich, from other parts of Switzerland, from other places in Europe, from Asia, and Asia, nonstop from Asia, China, Taiwan, Korea, Japan, champions, the champion of Taiwan, the champion of Korea, the champion of whatever, the champion of Canada, and then looking for lots, telling, why don't you do this? Why don't you do this? And of course, again, being a small farm, or relatively small, my farm is not small. Let's not get anymore. It's not small anymore because it's a good size. But if you go to another country, Brazil, Costa Rica, Guatemala, whatever, the farms there are huge, and making a change is not as easy as me making a change here. Okay, so let's do this. Today's harvest, 3 days in a reactor, stainless steel reactor, and then take it out and put it 3 days in a plastic tank. Let's do it with oxygen or without oxygen. So we can make changes easier than many people. So that's another advantage that we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're doing a lot of processing. You're doing washed coffee, you're doing honey naturals, and then of course all the experimental, like carbonic, anaerobic fermentation. And I just sometimes think, would I be a coffee producer? That would probably add to quite some challenges, because it's a lot of, beside of the production of the coffee, you also have to understand a lot about chemistry, of all that, all those processes. Why are you doing all those different processes? Is it then really like the exchange with the coffee community and providing the different tasting profiles?
You know why we do it? At the end, of course, it's a shame. It's for people like you. You go to a cafe and then you say, today I'm going to drink a black honey. I want to drink a black honey, and tomorrow I'm going to go with my friend that he only likes washed coffee. But I have to, a competitor that is asking me for advice. I'm going to recommend that he use an anaerobic is slow dry in bed process. Or I know that Sam Cora told me about the carbonic maceration that his partner Sasa used for his World Barista competition, and he won. We do carbonic maceration because we learn from them. We do honey because we learn from the Costa Rican. We use plastic tank because somebody told us, hey, try with the plastic tank. We learn from. So this community, like you said, is a community that, especially nowadays when you can see in the networks, like the other day, my friend's mistake from Nicaragua said, hey, I saw that you're drying extensive areas of coffee, but not in concrete patios or floors, the patios. So when I talked to Metric, I said, so how do you do that? He said, well, you put so many centimeters of parchment, you put a 90% holes or thickness saran, and then you put your coffee there, you do this. So you learn, you learn from other people, and then they learn from you. And when I go to the different conventions, I also talk to growers and all that stuff. And so we share information, so we help. In Panama, that's every day. We share information every day with our partners. Right here is my neighbor, Mérida. On the other side is Suarez, Mamacata. La Esmeralda, El Velo is 2 kilometers from here, 1.5 kilometers from here. As a matter of fact, La Esmeralda, El Velo, where they don't have coffee, part of the mountains goes above El Lira, like this, something like this. They go all the way to 3,000 plus meters. So we're close to each other. We share information. We talk to each other. I was with Daniel Peterson, Saturday in the Arden, somebody that is not in the coffee industry come over and said, so you guys are talking about coffee, huh? so it's non-stop.
And why is geisha coffee so popular in Panama? Because I say, is it the climate or is it the culture that you also came up with the coffees?
I want to be totally fair, and I don't want to just say something that is not correct. If you go to Bolivia, to Peru, if you go to farms in Guatemala, and you get a geisha there from high elevation, like in Bolivia and Peru, just like that, or even some places of Guatemala, and you put it next to a Panamanian geisha, wow, which one is the Panamanian geisha? The quality is pretty much. Now, as far as more available, like me, my neighbor, the other one doing the same and trying to get the best out of the coffee, I think that to be reasonable also, I think that we're doing a better job because we are very, very, very united here. And some of the growers, my friends, they say, wow, you guys are so united. So I had some guys from, I don't want to say the name of the country, but because it's not fair, but But I'm not saying anything wrong. So one of the, you know, the person that was hosting that country's booth in Korea, I don't remember which country, and the team that was hired by the country was making coffee for, you know, the people who came, you know, drinking coffee and all that. And then she says, wow, Panamanians in their booth, they are themselves making the coffee, the owners of the farms. They don't hire anybody. They don't bring anybody to make the coffee for them. They do the coffee themselves, and they serve it themselves, and they talk about the coffee themselves, and they talk about the farm themselves and the process themselves, and they know what's going on because we are doing it here every day, here in the morning. Most people are doing it like that. So the quality of the coffee per se can be achieved in, like I said, Peru, Colombia, Central America, high elevation, of course, keep that in mind, the same as Panama. Then we have our union here. So what do you dry the coffee? In a dark room? How does the dark room work? Well, you know, put a dehumidifier, shut down the room, and put it right away, the wash, and then the natural, put it in the bed 4 or 5 days and put it in the dark room. So I started doing it, for example, and then I said, hey, Osho, my dark room is not doing anything. Show me a video of your biodigester. I said, your humidifier. So I showed him a photo. He says, Wilford, your humidifier works only above 20 Celsius, and you are below 20 Celsius. Buy this one. So I bought the other one, and it's working. It's like that with everything, okay? So, and then we have a competition indoor. This competition brings so many growers. This year, for the BOP competition, we had 184 lots, and then 52 farmers submitted lots. The best 50 went to the auction, 36 geishas and 14 varietas that we call, and 38 growers were represented, okay? And then each one did the best it can. Let's not kid ourselves. I put the best lot that I can in the competition because I want to win. Feather wants to win, right? Nadal wants to win, right? Right? They practice and practice to win, right? So do we. So we all do the same thing, the drying, the hand selection, the peeling, the whatever. We try to do our best. We focus to do the best because we want to win or being top. Winning the best of Panama is very, very difficult, you know. But still, if you are up there, even if you don't win, yeah, I mean, you try to do the best. So doing that, the best of Panama has helped so much since 2004 when the geisha was discovered just in one of the competition. It was an art totally different with such an outstanding crop profile. In a blind cupping, international judges were so surprised. They said, what is this? The Ethiopian that the Panamanians have put in here? And at the end, it was the game. You know what happened the next day? The next day, I went looking for geisha seeds in my farm everywhere else. And then until I found geisha seeds and I started doing my nursery, and everybody started doing that. Everybody here started doing that right away. So we started doing that. Everybody focused on doing the geisha because the geisha was so outstanding. And then, you know, part of it's like the perfect storm. Everything came together. And it has been like that. And growing, quality, you know, the demand for our geishas here in Panama is very high. The auction is crazy. You know what happened this year in the auction? It crashed. Not the first time it crashes, by the way. It crashed because too many users, too many bidders, too many auto bids, too many bids at the same time that the software was not, the servers couldn't handle it. And then they fixed the servers and we started 6 hours later. But the first year, when it went in 2004, the auction in 2004, so the thing was like this. The first five POP didn't have auction. They didn't have a geisha. So the price was 1 cent higher, 2 cents higher. So $1.05, $1.06, the other lot, $1.07, $1.08, At the end, 6 hours later, the winner, $2.37, $2.37 after 7 hours. It went like that for 4 years. Comes geisha, auction opens, and then all of a sudden, a few minutes later, it frizzed, it froze, it closed. So we called the administrator. What happened? He said, we have a hacker. We have a hacker, and I had to detect the hacker. How do you know you have a hacker? He says, because it went down, it went up to $10 a pound right away, $10 a pound right away.
What?
From 1 cent to the normal, $10 a pound. And then it opened back, and he said, there was no hacker. Somebody was this coffee. And then when he changed from 90 cents a pound to $1 a pound, it crashed again, crashed, totally crashed in Wisconsin. And then we asked the guy, Malcolm, what happened? What happened? What happened with the auction? He says, well, you know what happened? Is that who in their sane mind thought that a coffee was going to sell for $100 a pound? It was not designed for this. So it has happened many times in a BOP auction. This year it happened again. Or we had a hard time in this year. We the SCAP members, we almost went crazy trying to figure out what to do, when to restart the auction, what happened in Asia, what time is in Asia, whatever. So we decided to start 6 hours afterwards, and then we did it. It continued well. So all this, you know, all this makes all the growers say, wow, gosh, I want to be part of the auction. So I'm going to do a better job. Last year, I remember that when I harvested the coffee, I'm giving you an example. They were 100% burgundy red for washed coffee, and they were not pulped the same day. They were pulled the next day. I'm not pulled the same day, like Wilson did, for example. They got second place. Or like the winner did. Pulped the same day, fermented in the, aerobically fermented, so all the, coffee fermented gets all that. So people start, adding more efforts to do a better quality.
How did you like the video so far? I find these interviews just so inspiring. There is so much you can learn about coffee roasting. Did you know that one of the main reasons we can get so great people to these interviews is that we have a couple of thousand subscribers in this channel? Because like that, they know if they take their time, there are going to be a lot of people that are going to watch the video then. At the same time, if I'm looking at YouTube, I see that most of the people that are watching these videos don't subscribe to our channel. Therefore, I'm just asking you for a little favor. Take these 2 seconds of time and subscribe to our channel. You are going to do me, but also the whole coffee roasting community, a big favor, because the more subscriber we have, the more and bigger guests we can get for these interviews. By the way, if you like this video, you can also give it a like, because the more it is liked, the more it's going to be shown on YouTube. So much for that. I thank you very much. But now let's continue with the video. Wow. So it's this competition. And yeah, it's actually beautiful to see, because on one hand, you have these competitions with the other growers in Panama. And then also you're really a team, because always, to me, it looks like this always when you're at the events with the Panama geisha producers, you're like a team together, you're going to the stands. I think it looks like you have a really nice culture of this challenge, but also then friendships between the coffee producers in Panama.
From the very beginning, you know how the farmers used to work here? The farm next door, the other one here. Back then, there was no road to come to the farm. There was a train, a red road that from David, the main city near the port, up to the town of Boquete, which is 60 kilometers from the coast. And then that's downtown. Downtown is from here is 10 kilometers. So from there, they had to walk. It started in 1905, the train. So they had to walk up to the farm or take horseback riding. There were no employees. So the farmers used to walk what they called juntas. What did juntas mean? So you have the two employees, the wife, the son, and the guy working in this farm for 3 days with the people from here, from the other farm. So all 10 people will move after they finish the activity here to the next farm, to the next farm, to the next farm, and finish the work. They used to do juntas, and our neighbors, and work together. So it was always, oh, hey, you clean that dog? How many horses are you taking? I'm taking 3 horses. Can you put a bag of coffee in one of your horses? Yes, I'll take it down. So it started like that. And so my grandfather's culture, my father's culture, and our culture is totally different, you know? But our culture started to work together. So it has been like that in Panama. Well, again, we're very small. Like in Guatemala, to go from one farm to the other one, or even water, Peru, or one here to the other one, is 5 hours drive, whatever. Even in Colombia, is. But to go from here to, let's say, to the side of the mountains, okay, to go from here to the farthest farm, Herman, my friend Herman, which is in border with Costa Rica, it takes 2.25 hours. To get from one farm to the farthest farm from here is 2.25 farm. And in 2.25 hour farm, I would go to 50 farms. Okay? So, we are very close to each other. Basis, communicated, is it a hell?
One thing I would like to ask you, because yeah, you're really deep into all the details of coffee production, and we've been talking about the soil, the environment, the different varietals, and then also the processing. So, what are the factors that influence the taste and the quality of a coffee most when it comes to coffee production?
Okay, what influences the most, according to concern here, the elevation. So, I'll give you an example. Remember I told you that I was born in a small coffee farm? That coffee farm is at 1,200 meters. That farm used to have Típica. Típica was the heirloom variety of everybody here in Panama. For 80 years, only Típica was since 1875 all the way to, 1960-something, when all the varieties started coming. So we had Típica there, and then we switched to Catuai. Good coffee, okay, 1,200 meters. But it was always better here at Elida, at 1,900 meters, or whatever, 1,700 meters. Was better. Comes Geisha. Remember I told you that the day after it won in the Best of Panama auction in 2004, me and everybody started looking for Geisha's trees in their farm. And then if they didn't have any Geisha trees in their farm, they started looking for seeds. So everybody, 1,000 meters, 1,100 meters, 1,200 meters, all the way to 1,800 meters, whatever, started planting Geisha in their farms. After a while, the ones below, say, 1,400 meters, found out that the Geisha, of course, it was a very good coffee, but it didn't represent the Geisha variety. So any farmer would Geisha below, say, 1,300 meters, just doesn't have Geisha, or considered as a Geisha, because it doesn't have the Geisha coffee. As you go higher and higher, the Geisha profile becomes more, you know, you can see it more like the jasmine, the lemongrass, the black tea, all the attributes of the Geisha, the mangoes, papayas, develop more and more at higher elevation. Why, Ingo? Easy. When a tree flowers here at Elida, let's say at 1,900 meters, when the flower comes out, that flower would be a fruit, a coffee fruit. Remember, coffee is a fruit, we drink the seeds. It will be a fruit 9 months later. 9 months later, that flower, you're going to pick. If you are at 1,200 meters, where I have the nursery now, where I was born, you will harvest it at 7.5 months later. So what happens is, from flowering to picking, the seed had the best chance to develop slowly, everything. And when you have a baby, and from the beginning, you feed him well, you teach him well, you do all the necessary exercises for the kids, little by little, the education, the air, the exercise, the food, whatever, all the way until you harvest it, the coffee slowly developing because the cool temperature, cold for me is warm for you. So cold temperature for coffee is when temperature drops below 12, like this morning was 13 here at 79 meters, morning 13. So below, say, 12 is very, it's cold for coffee. Cold means that it takes longer to produce. You plant a tree at 1,900 meters, what means every morning is 12. And sometimes go to 10 and to 9. I have data recorders. That coffee takes longer to produce, that tree. Takes 1-2 years longer to produce. The seed, which is the most important thing, takes longer to harvest. So it develops very slowly. All its properties will develop much more, you know, precise. And then at the end, you will have a better quality of coffee. That is only achieved here at higher elevations because the temperatures depend directly proportional to the elevation of the ambient here. So that is very important. Of course, volcanic zones, you have easier, you know, your nutrition, your reabsorb is much easier with organic soils. Rain powders are good for coffee to hear. Vegetation that surrounds the coffee plantation because of the beneficial microorganisms, the yeast, the bacteria that surround the coffee trees. This is also, people will say, well, the yeast, the mountains are full of yeast, different type of yeast. And they come on top of the trees, and then those yeast, you know, the fruits use those seeds for the benefit. Then the quality is benefited. I mean, I'm not a scientist. In Panama, we do very little scientific, research. It's or like wine, that they do a lot of research. Even in other countries that they have real, very, sophisticated coffee research, and Panama doesn't have that. But the yeast are something that help a lot the coffee, the bacteria, the microorganisms. So all this has been used properly by the farmers because we can damage that fruit when we bust it. We can, you know, dry it in 2 months and it will taste baggy in a few weeks. We can store it at high temperatures and it will be baggy and off flavors very easily when you store it you started poorly, you can do that. Put it right now that is summer in your area. Take a bag of green coffee and put it in the dash of your car or on the window, and take the same coffee and keep it at 15 Celsius and cup it 2 weeks later, you will see. So you can damage your coffee during the process, during the storage, during the drying. So if you keep those the way they should, you're going up. And that's what happens, the quality of coffee in general, all over the world, the same thing.
Yeah. And it's a lot also of quality control and then being up to with
quality control. We cup here almost every day. Do they want to cup it on Saturday, cup Friday, Thursday?
When it comes to cupping, I see behind you the Nucleus Link roaster. So you have been one of the first that started working with the Cafe logic that Sam was tuning, and then with the Nucleus Link. Why did you start using with this? Why did you start using this machine?
Okay. Why and when? So I said it before we started this interview. I was talking to you that my son has been the Brewers Cup champion of Panama 3 times. So when we go abroad, the first year was in Boston, then it was in Milan, then it was in Australia. Do we take roasted coffee from here, from our machines? Do we roast it when we get there and look for somebody who roasts it for us? No, Sam Cora has been very close with us for many, many years, especially with my son. Sam Cora said that was COVID, you know, COVID times. He tells my son, hey, Wilford, I'm going to send you a real neat machine to roast for competition. It's called the Cafe Logix, the first version before the Link. I have it downstairs, by the way. When I shut down, they say, give me a minute. I was telling the guys, because they are addicted to that machine, shut down the machine because it's too much noise. When you finish roasting, stop, still working. That was almost 3 years ago. So Sam sends the roaster to us, and then, let's see, because we're used to drum roasters, you know, gas drum roasters. We have a couple of them. We have a Crobat that we use a lot, drum roaster. We have a Pinalense drum roaster. We used to use a Jabesborn drum roaster. So with a drum roaster, you have to be, you know, you have to be there, you know. You have to be there, period. And I have a good roaster that has roasted, who knows how many samples with a drum roaster. But so, Sam says, I'm going to send you that, try it. So I started trying it. Oh, it's coming out good. Wow, yeah, it's nice. The Cafe Logix is nice. And then I say, what do we use cup coffee for that? So we started, you know, cupping with that. Then we saw Sam in Milan. And then we started talking to him and learning from him. You know that Sam is like an educator, and he's so addicted to roasting. This is something, he's crazy. Then he had the chance to come to Panama. We have a cafe in Panama. So he brought his own Cafe Logix back then to the shop in Panama City. And I had sent Wilford Jr., he was in Panama City, a lot of green samples. So Sam started roasting these different profiles at that. With the Cafe Logix, doing the profiles and roasting that. Then he came to Boquete. He brought his Cafe Logix and he roasted 36 samples. And we cupped those samples the next day. Cupped some the same day. I couldn't believe it. I said, the same day? You have to dig gas. He said, and then Sam explained, you know, the theoretical and the why you didn't have to wait, like in a gas roaster. So we started cupping right away. And that's right, man. Well, that's right. Then the next day, we cupped a lot of samples. And then we were so happy with the Cafe Logix. And then he came out with the Link. In the show in Australia, we were in the show in Australia. It was one year ago, I think. Yeah, it was 1 year ago. I think it was in September, August, September. And then I said, Sam, when are you launching this one, the Link? Was using it there. I did a presentation with him there. He said, it's going to be in November. First of November, I said, hey, when are you like? No, it's a little delay. Until he told me, okay, they are out. I said, I want, He came with one of those here in June, July of last year, like a year ago or so. And he started rooting for 4 hours and then explaining my team about the machine, everything. He started explaining, and we started copying and that and this and that. And the drone roaster, he said, wow, you know, it's so good. That's right, man. And then it was a good roaster. And then he started trying it and he started using it. And he said how easy it was. Just press a button or you put the elevation process and then you put also the variety. And then you put it in your phone and it gives you, okay, use whatever profile, you know, we press the profile and then just you go away, you don't have to be. And then, and now those guys, so I bought two, one for them because they had the drum roster, which we wrote a lot, and another one for one of these for them. And then they come here to my desk all the time. They say, hey, we're going to take your link because we need it. You have to bring it back, bring it back. But sometimes you think, look, I got it. I said, oh, I'm going to take this one home. So I wrote to their voice from back. And then, so the link, to tell you the truth, is a very good roster. Probably there are some other roasters that are more user-friendly that you just, you know, you press another button and it will discharge and all that. But, you know, those other roasters are much more expensive. One of Sam's idea, he went to many farms here in Central America and in South America. One of Sam's idea is that every farmer will be able to roast their own sample. You know how much my probat sample roaster, two drum sample roaster cost me? The shipping cost, because two big boxes. One was the, you know, the shaft collector. They want the sample roasters. Set it up here, the gas system, the security things and all that. Ingo, not less than $14,000. You know how much I pay for this? Because I was one of the first deals, because everybody got it. I pay $1,400 for this versus $12,000. Let's see, two barrels. Barrels. 14 plus 14, $2,800. Let's say $3,000 versus working with the gas and everything else up there in my cupping room. $16,000. So $8,000 per barrel versus, say, right now they are like $1,800 in the US. Versus $1,800. Any farmer can buy one of these. Any farmer. Here in Panama, at least. We have. You know how many in Panama we have? If I tell you 30, I think that I'm short. Maybe more, maybe 5. We're not a big country, remember? Was more. When we went to Portland, everybody was. And I said, I have mine at the mill right now, so I don't have to buy any here. So it's a big advantage for a farmer, for anybody. Because they have so many, Sam has so many profiles, so like your neighbor or a home roaster. I have, on Saturday, I had a couple that were home roasters from Bermuda. And I said, oh, so you're a home roaster. And they told me what machine they were using. I said, you want to have a very inexpensive machine, very good that you can roast any coffee, and you can probably find the profile for those Kenyans or Ethiopians or Colombian, honey, natural, anaerobically processed, honeys, anaerobically processed, aerobically processed wash, whatever. This one, you can do it because it's right well for it. So the home roaster, Saturday, can you give me share profiles? Because I also have Ikawa. Can you share the profile for the car? I said, I mean, but I'm not, yes, but you are at sea level at 1700 meters now, which this one too, with any air roaster, you have to adjust the fan. Adjusting the fan here is so easy. You just follow a few steps. What elevation are you? 100, 200, 300, 700. Set. The fan speed set, elevation set, everything set, run. And you're going to pay $2,000 in the US because they get it from the US, they have next door. Not even $2,000, $1,800, whatever. And then, so they took the information from the lake, and many people have done the same thing. Now that I'm going to Japan for the convention, I want to ask Sam, tell me who has links in Japan, please, because I don't want to take roasted sample for here, having a link there. So, yeah, it's a big advantage. Yeah, this guy is coming. Hey, Teofil, come here. This is a sample roaster that has used drum sample forever. The thing he said,
Tú se la brinca bien. Mejor.
You know what he said? He said, he just walked by like Patricia. I didn't call him. And you know what he said? I said, in Spanish, hey, I'm telling him that you also the link, you use the link out to it. He says, mejor, better, better. Don't tell that to the proper people.
Yeah, it's the same for like coffee traders, roasters. I mean, if you do sample roasting, then you can just let the machine do the job for you and don't have to be spending that much time with finding the right beans. Yeah. Perfect. By the way, there is a video that I also did with Sam. You talked a lot about Sam, and I'm going to link it here where you can hear the story also from the side of Sam, how he developed everything.
The interview that you did with Sam?
Yeah, I saw it.
Very nice. I like Sam so much.
There's a lot to learn always also from him. Always you talk with him. He's also you're sort of coffee passionate people. There is always so much to learn from you.
Thank you.
And Wilford, now, so thanks a lot for all the information you were sharing. If people want to know more about you, if they want to follow you, if they want to know more about Lamastus Coffee Estates, where can they find more information about you?
Well, our official Instagram is like this, Lamas Family Estate. Let's see. Okay. Lamastus Family Estates is in Instagram. You can find all the information there. My son is the one who runs the social media, but you text him, hey, Wolfer, I want to go to Panama. When can I go? Can I get samples? There is a barista competing in the national, whatever. Can I, if you're a grower, can you tell me a little bit more about me? I can just, my son will send me the message.
Yeah, perfect, fantastic. So I'm going to put the links to your website and also Instagram in the show notes. And it's also fantastic that you offer people that they can come to your farm and try the coffee.
I love doing that.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. You learn, you know?
Yeah.
You learn from people. You share information. The easiest way to make somebody happy is to share your knowledge with somebody that asks you something that they don't know. They are happy. I'm happy when I ask somebody a question and they give me the answer. Wow, that's good, man. So that's the easiest way. It doesn't cost anything. Make somebody happy, and then you are helping society, especially coffee society.
Hey, thanks a lot, Wilford, for sharing all those information. And anyway, you and your whole family and your whole team, all the best wishes to Panama and good luck. And hope to see you soon again somewhere at any coffee festival or in Panama. Thanks a lot, Wilford, for everything.
Thank you so much for having me here. I appreciate it very much. I know that you are very well known. A lot of people watch this podcast. And they are welcome to come here. Of course, you are welcome to come here. And then, of course, I'll see you in the next event. And please come to Boquete before the next event.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, Wilford. I hope this video was fun to watch and it was helpful for you. If you want to know more about coffee roasting, then come to our website, roasttravels.com. We have a lot of information on roasting, but we have also equipment like coffee roasting machines, color meters, books, and many more. In addition to that, a really nice selection of green coffee beans from all over the world. You find a link to our website right here. You could also look through our YouTube channels. We have a lot of videos on coffee roasting, on equipment, but also very inspirational interviews with coffee roasters, coffee traders, and many more. If you have any questions left, then always come back to me. I'm Ingo from Roast Travels, and I look forward to talking to you.